Okay, call to order. Now it is. A hearing of the Tax Reform Division of the Senate Committee on Taxes, April 11, 2013. We have a quorum. We have the minutes from Tuesday, April 9th. Are there any corrections? Seeing none, Senator Eaton moves approval of the Tuesday, April 9th meeting minutes. So members and members of the public.
And a vote on the approval of the minutes.
We did. We didn't. All in favor of the Eaton motion, please say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. The minutes are approved. Today we're going to go through the Tax Reform Division report. We have had it set up as articles, but we're not going to act on it today. We're just going to go through it and have questions from members. On Tuesday, we will be taking it up for a vote, and then it will be introduced as a bill, a committee report bill, and sent to the full committee to become part of the omnibus bill. And thanks so many of you for making it through the weather. It's pretty extraordinary out there today. Senator Thompson mentioned that the roads felt like it did in the blizzard, the Halloween blizzard. I don't know about you, but we had kind of like a checkerboard or a washerboard trying to get down the highway. Just a couple of things before we begin. What we've tried to do, and we'll have the staff go through each article, what we've tried to do is to identify those proposals, either from the governor or from members, that taken together have give us the opportunity to reform one tax system or another. Those provisions, which, although they may be important to our overall and final project or proposal, that we decided either should wait for one reason or another, but mostly because they were not particularly reform. For example, in the income tax article, we will be dealing with revenues, additional revenues in the full committee, but any change in the income tax rates is not part of the individual income tax article. There are some things in there, but they're not dealing with the rates. So with that, and as we go along, if you have questions, and there are and there is a division report, a spreadsheet, and then article by article. Senator Skoy or Senator Dzik, did you have a question?
Well, Madam Chair, the only thing I was going to mention with regard to the differences between reform or not would be the LGA formula, which is
sure.
Reform.
Yeah, we'll get to that.
And the county program aid
is
that's not
another
included.
That's another good example. In our city aid, Article 6, we do have the Reinert bill with regard to changing the formula in city aid, but county aid, for example, is just an increase based on the same formula, so that's not part of this bill. So let's begin then.
Madam Chair.
Oh, Senator Dietzig.
And I've had a lot of nervous people. Thank you, Madam Chair. I've had a lot of nervous people in the last few days. So if there, and I just want to clarify this, but my understanding is if your bill was heard in this division, but it's not included in the division report, doesn't mean the bill. I want to clarify that that does not mean the bill is dead or that part is dead.
It doesn't mean a thing.
I just wanted, because I had a lot of nervous people in the last few days, and so I just want to clarify that.
I made that perfectly clear.
I'm just restating that.
It doesn't mean anything. I mean, it could, but it doesn't. Ms. Pollock, you'd take us through the first article.
Madam Chair and members, I'll start with Article 1, Individual Income Tax. Sections 1 and 2 pertain to the Angel Investment Credit, and they add some language to define a qualified Greater Minnesota business and add some provisions pertaining to a liquidation event and prohibiting businesses that have been traded on a public exchange for purposes of qualifying investments for the Angel Investment Credit. These were provisions from Senator Bonoff's bill, Senate File 730, Senator Nelson's Senate File 285, and Senator Chamberlain's Senate File 131. Section 3 contains a provision from Senator Chamberlain's Senate File 131, and it increases the allocation for the Angel Investment Credit by $5 million. So it goes from $12 million under current law to $17 million, and it also extends the credit for 1 year. Section 4 contains some language requiring deed to promote the Angel Investment Credit in Greater Minnesota and requires that if the promotion goals are not met, then the Angel Investment Credit for Greater Minnesota businesses is increased to 40% from the current 25%. Section 5 provides some additional language pertaining to the Angel Investment Credit in Greater Minnesota for purposes of revoking credits when investments are termed or businesses that have been invested in are deemed ineligible. And then Section 6 requires that the report to the legislature under current law also include the number of qualified small businesses that are women or minority owned. Section 7 provides an income tax for clothing sales. And Section 8 just provides for an adjustment of the clothing sales tax credit for tax year 2013 because of the shift in the effective dates between income tax and sales tax.
And Ms. Pollock, would you just go over briefly again how the sales tax credit is going to perform?
Madam Chair, the credit is a refundable credit, $60 for a married couple filing jointly and $30 for all other filers. And then it allows for an additional $30 for the first dependent, $15 for the second and third dependents, $10 for the fourth, and $5 for each subsequent. And then the credit is reduced by $10 for every 1,000 of income in excess of 200% of the federal poverty guideline.
And the definition of income that's in 290.067 sub 2A, where is that gross income, adjusted gross income? Where is the federal poverty guideline being applied?
The federal poverty guideline is being applied, I believe, at Minnesota taxable income and applying the credit after taking all of the subtractions.
Just want to make sure
from the
we
bottom
understand
line.
What that it's an adjusted income. Okay. Any questions, members?
Article 2 is corporate franchise taxes. Section 1 contains the provisions in Senator Rest's file, Senate File 1010, and this is the Technology Corporate Franchise Certificate Transfer Program. This allows companies to transfer or receive a credit for net operating losses. This bill is slightly different from the bill as introduced in that the allocation is $15 million per year rather than $60 million in the original bill. And the maximum lifetime value of surrendered benefits that a corporation can surrender is $4 million. In the original bill, I believe this was $15 million. Sections 2, 3, 4, 5, 14, and 18 eliminate the deduction for foreign operating corporation income. This is commonly known as FOC income. So this income would be taxed the same way as other corporate income. Also, in Sections 3 and 5, there's a subtraction for the amount of the federal credit for qualified railroad maintenance rehabilitation expenditures. This is a federal credit that was extended for through tax year 2013, so this credit will only apply for tax year 2013 in Minnesota. Section 6 adds a conforming change to the definition of taxable income for the NOL transfer in Section 1 of the bill. Section 7 reduces the corporate franchise tax rate from 9.8% to 9%. Section 7 authorizes the credit for the NOL franchise carryover. Section 9 increases the research and development credit second tier from 2.5 to 4.5%. Section 10 makes a cross-reference change to the subtraction for qualified railroad maintenance expenditures that was in Section 3. Section 11 changes the corporate alternative minimum tax from 5.8% to 5.3%.
And that, members, is just a proportional change to go along with the reduction in the rate from to 9.0% of the overall rate.
Madam Chair and members, Section 12 modifies the threshold amounts and the tax amounts for the corporate minimum fee and also requires the commissioner to adjust these amounts for inflation annually.
And this was a provision in the governor's second proposal.
Madam Chair, yes, that's correct. Section 13, 14, 15, 17, and then Section 5 as well, remove the subtraction for foreign royalty income. Under current law, this subtraction is 80% of royalties of foreign income is allowed to be subtracted, and so that income would be taxed as at the same rate as other corporate income. And Section 16 requires that a corporation may not take a dividend received deduction if the corporation received REIT dividends. And this is a provision in federal law that the state is now conforming to. We had treated REIT dividends differently than under federal law.
Okay. Any questions? Many of these proposals or sections in here were from the governor's bills. And then we did the NOL transfer, increasing the R&D credit, and the proposals, bringing together proposals on angel investment credit. And Matt. More and lowering the rate.
Madam Chair and members, Article 3 is sales and use tax. Section 1 contains a number of changes to the definition of sale and purchase. First, it adds the receipt of custom computer software and the right to access and use custom and pre-written computer software. This is in connection with many of the changes that we are making to provide to require that digital products are subject to tax. On page 2, there's language added to subject to tax, privilege of admission to exhibitions, professional athletic events, including the rental of box seats and suites at professional athletic events. Exhibitions means things like trade shows, boat shows, home and garden shows. Uh, Later down on page 2, under clause 5, that is just replacing some language that's moved from elsewhere in the statute to clarify the definition of road construction. On page 3 and at the top of page 4, we're striking some of the exemptions under current law, and those exemptions are moved to a later section in the bill. On page 4, starting on line 23, we define sale and purchase to include furnishing for consideration of specified digital products or other digital products, and the right to use specified digital products or other digital products.
Ms. Pollack, these provisions are taken from the recommendations of the streamlined sales tax. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, yes.
Language?
That's correct. And this is also language from the governor's bill and Senate that Senator Skoy introduced, Senate File 552, and your Senate File 35. Beginning on page 4, line 30, there are several new definitions for taxable sales, and they include personal services such as haircuts, tattoos, manicures, pedicures, personal instruction in athletics and dance, elective cosmetic procedures, repair labor for farm machinery, motor vehicles, and other tangible personal property, warehousing for tangible personal property, and that excludes storage of farm products and storage of electronic data, the furnishing of court documents, and then any other personal service that is not subject to tax under these earlier mentioned items. And these would include things like event planning, wedding planning, personal shopping services, personal organizing services. But there are a number of exclusions, as I mentioned later on in the article. Section 2 makes some changes to the definition of retail sale and provides that sales of service are considered retail sales. Moving on to page 7. The definition of, I'm sorry, a sale of motor vehicle paint and materials is included in the definition of retail sale. This is from Senator Rest File 326, and it provides some language to clarify how the sale of motor vehicle repair paint and materials is invoiced and recorded for purposes of determining whether it's a purchase for resale or taxable service.
And I would note for members that you'll see on the spreadsheet that that's shown as a a loss of revenue, but later auto repairs is brought into taxable transactions, and so it's absorbed in that. So that but separately stated, it shows a loss or a tax benefit, however you want to look at it.
Madam Chair and members, Section 3 makes some changes to the definition of tangible personal property to exclude the digital products language, and this is a requirement under the streamlined sales model language. Section 4 provides a definition of delivered electronically for purposes of the digital products. Section 5 provides some updates to the definition of cable television service, so it will now be called pay television service, just to reflect the modernization of home satellite services and digital recording services. Section 6 adds the digital products language to the definition of bundled transaction for determining the taxability of a bundled transaction. Section 7 provides some clarifying language on the definition of ringtone for purposes of the digital goods language. Section 8 defines motor vehicle repair paint and materials for purposes of the retail sale mentioned earlier in the article. Sections 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, and 15 all provide definitions for the taxation of digital products. So digital audio works are things like musical, spoken, or other words, such as a recording of a reading of a book or music. Digital audio video works are things like movies or TV shows. Digital books are pretty self-explanatory. I would note in Section 13 that other digital products do not include newspapers. Section 16 provides a definition of service. Section 17 reduces the general sales tax rate from 6.5% to 5.677%. And Section 18 reduces the constitutional sales tax rate for the legacy funds from 0.375% to 0.323%.
And that gives us a combined rate of 6%.
Madam Chair, yes, correct. A combined total rate of 6%. Section 19 just strikes some cross-reference language so we maintain the current rate of 6.5% for the lottery in lieu tax. Section 20 provides the definition of solicitor. This is commonly known as the Amazon or affiliate nexus provision. And this was, Senator Rest, this was in your Senate File 8 and also in the governor's bill. Section 21 provides language for multiple points of use. This was from Senator Rest File 1433, and it provides for relief of seller liability if the seller obtains a multiple points of use certificate. And this is for purposes of when a good is purchased that is used in other states and may not be subject uniformly to sales tax as it is in Minnesota. Section 22 removes the exemptions for over-the-counter drugs, so only prescription drugs would be tax-exempt.
Although if an over-the-counter drug was prescribed, it would be exempt.
Correct. Madam Chair and members, if you look on line 18.8, there is an existing definition of prescribed or prescription, and so if any medication is prescribed, then that would be covered under
that
the prescription umbrella,
where,
and that
where
would
you
trump
purchase it or what kind of drug it is.
Correct. Section 23 adds some language to include tangible personal property in the materials consumed for industrial production exemption, and adds some clarifying language to say that industrial production does not include the newly taxable services in paragraph M or N, as we discussed earlier. Section 24 is from Senator Restbill, Senate File 78, and this provides a phased-in exemption for capital equipment purchases. For fiscal years 14 and 15, the exemption would be available upfront to businesses with not more than 80 full-time equivalent employees. And then beginning in fiscal year 16, the exemption is phased in for all qualifying capital equipment purchases.
And this was the approach, it was in one of my bills, but it was the approach taken in the last biennium by Senator Koch.
Madam Chair, correct. And that's it's also the a version of this provision was included in the omnibus tax bill last
right.
year. Section 25 provides some clarifying language pertaining to publication materials and requires that the definition of publication does not include magazines and periodicals, regardless of whether they're sold over-the-counter or by a subscription. Section 26 exempts purchases by local governments from sales tax. This is the provision contained in Senate File 104, Senator Wieger's bill, Senator Senjum, Senate File 329, and Senator Rest's 1523. Excuse me. This exemption is currently available only for towns, and this would extend the exemption to cities and counties. Section 27 and Section 29 provide an exemption for sales to established religious orders. And these are dealing with things like when a university provides a catering service to a religious affiliation affiliated with the university.
And whose bill was that? Is that Senator Ingebrigtsen's?
Madam Chair, wasn't that the Senator Fischbach provision?
Oh, Fischbach. Yeah. Yes, okay.
Madam Chair, yes, I don't believe that has been introduced again this year.
Okay.
Section 28, 30, and 31 provide that currently exempt purchases by veterans groups and fundraising sales for or by nonprofit groups and fundraising events by nonprofit groups also have the same exemption for the newly taxable services. Section 32 provides sales tax exemptions for nursing homes and boarding care homes. This is Senator Rest's file 1492, and this was also included in the omnibus tax bill last year. Section 33 contains a number of exemptions from sales tax for services that I've mentioned earlier in the article. I won't go through all of them individually, but I will note that some particular differences between this bill and these provisions as they were introduced in the governor's bill. This bill does not tax veterinary services for household pets, legal services, accounting services, business consulting services, architectural, engineering, information technology services, staffing, employing, and business support services. And at the end of this section, there's a number of miscellaneous services that are exempt. Sections 34, 35, and 36 all contain some cross-reference changes for the capital equipment exemption phase-in mentioned earlier in the article. Section 37 provide some new language to maintain the motor vehicle lease sales tax revenue at the current law rate of 6.875%. That is not lowered with the rate of the otherwise lowered rate in this article. Section 38 provides some clarifying language on the tax base for locally collected taxes. In 2011, some legislation was approved that would include in the definition of the tax base accommodation intermediary services. And not all lodging taxes are subject to that definition because they're not collected by the Department of Revenue. So this provides some clarifying language to provide that all locally collected taxes would have the same sales tax base as state taxes.
And this this is similar language to that last section, whatever it was, 28 or 29 of Representative Linchesky's bill.
Madam Chair, that's correct.
This
yes.
Is it similar or identical?
It's identical language. Senator Representative Linchesky's bill also contains some language about reporting for the local sales taxes, and this bill does not contain the reporting provisions. Section 39 requires the City of Duluth to reduce its local sales tax rate to 0.87% from the current rate of 1%. And just for some context on this, under general law, when local sales taxes are authorized, the sales taxes are required to terminate when sufficient revenues from the local sales tax have been raised to pay off the projects that they were authorized for. Duluth is the only city that has a fairly open-ended local sales tax. They are, it's not subject to any particular use, and it is not does not have a termination date. So Duluth would come out somewhat differently under the reduction to the general sales tax rate and the expansion of the base as provided in this article. So this is just a reduction proportionate to the reduction of the state sales tax rates. Section 40 just provides a reviser's instruction, and Section 41, the repealer, I will just note that it repeals the exemption for the sales tax on clothing, Super Bowl admissions, court reporter documents, and telecommunications and other satellite services and equipment.
Are there any questions from members or comments on Article 3? Okay, tobacco, Article 4. This reflects the work of, among others, Senator Dietzick and Senator Skoy. Thank you.
excuse me, Madam Chair and members, Section 1 removes a reference to the health impact fee. This fee is repealed at the end of the article, and Section 1 is a reporting provision for the health impact fee.
And members, you'll see the that shows up twice on the spreadsheet to indicate that we're now going to call that fee a tax. Nothing more sinister than that. And the negative number reflects the, as I understand it from Ms. McQuay, the elasticity of the impact of the elasticity of demand when the on the health impact fee, when the increase on the tax on tobacco products as currently in law, but increasing that, that's where there's a loss that's shown there because of the elasticity of demand. Did I get that right? More or less?
Madam Chair and members, the loss reflects that we won't get the transfer from the Health Impact Fund any longer because it won't exist.
No, I know that, but then the impact on it even there is going to show some impact from the increase in the tax is what I.
Madam Chair,
I thought
correct.
You had told me. Yeah, that's what I was. Not so much. I think we all understand the transfer of it, but there's also another impact there. Okay,
Madam Chair and members, sections 2 to 9 and 18 provide some new definitions for tobacco products. Most notably, in Section 2, the definition of little cigar is taken from Senate File 791, Senator Coonan's bill. And the definition of moist snuff in Section 3 is from Senator Dibble's bill, Senate File 209. Section 4 contains a new definition for premium cigar. Section 8 includes in the definition of tobacco products premium cigars, and also that a similar provision for a tobacco products distributor. Section 10 increases the rate on cigarettes. Under current law, this is expressed as a mill rate. This is expressed here in cents to make it a little easier to read and understand. Section 11 provides for annual indexing of the
Senator Skoy.
Madam Chair, should we clarify that that's the 94-cent number?
Ms. Pollack, that's the 94-cent number. Is that correct?
Madam Chair and members,
Ms. McQuay.
What is reflected here includes the 94 cents as well as the 75 cents per pack, which then rolls back to a per cigarette number. So both are included here.
The combination.
The combination of
yes.
The 75 cents and the 94 cents.
That's correct.
Section 11 requires annual indexing of the in-lieu cigarette sales tax rate. Section 12 adds some new rates for tobacco products. For moist snuff, it imposes the same rate imposed on a pack of 20 cigarettes and provides some clarifying language about what is a container of moist snuff. It also provides for the same level of taxation for little cigars as for a pack of cigarettes. Section 13 provides a new rate for premium cigars. Sections 14 and 15 are the corresponding use tax changes for the sales tax changes to little cigars and premium cigars. Section 17 provides for an adjustment of the in-lieu sales tax rate, and I believe Ms. McQuay can explain this when we go through the spreadsheet, but there's a somewhat of a shift when these rates change on July 1, 2013, and the in-lieu rate is adjusted on a calendar year basis. Section 18 makes a cross-reference change for premium cigars in Chapter 325D, which is the consumer protection chapter. Section 19 provides for a floor stocks tax as of July 1 for cigarettes, and this is from Senator Nelson, Senate File 144, and Senator Dibbles, 209. Section 20 is a tobacco tax collection report from Senator Nelson's 144, Senator Dibbles 209, and Senator Dietzick's Senate File 134. This section also appropriates $100,000 to the Department of Revenue for preparing the report. Section 21 provides for a one-time fund transfer to the general fund of any balance remaining in the Health Impact Fund after the Health Impact Fund and fee is repealed.
Okay, Article 5.
Article 5 is...
Oh, wait a minute. I'm sorry. Are there any questions for Ms. Pollack about the tobacco tax article? Okay.
Article 5 is relatively simply broken up into two parts. Sections 1 through 4... essentially decouple the Minnesota estate tax from the federal estate tax. Section 1 is a reporting provision for the spousal exclusion, which I'll explain in a moment. Section 2 provides for, strikes some language defining the Minnesota taxable, adjusted taxable estate. And then Section 3, there's a new definition for the Minnesota taxable estate. There's a formula provided for determining that, but essentially the formula takes the federal adjusted gross estate and subtracts the Minnesota farm and small business property exclusions and provides for a spousal exclusion of $1 million. And these are sometimes called the portability problems that had come up in earlier meetings of the division in the session. Section 4 provides some new language for calculating the tax amount for the estate tax, and it just has two levels. On the first $5 million, the rate is 9%, and on all over $5 million, it's 17%.
And these provisions were part of the work of Senator Gazelka and Senator Coonan, is that correct? I mean, at least in the estate tax area.
Yeah, the estate tax area, yeah. Yes, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair, yes, these changes, I think, came as a result of the discussion in the division from Senator Coonan's bill and Senator Gazelka's bill that somewhat modified the estate tax. But when we were discussing these provisions, the department raised the issue of the rate bubble that happens under the estate tax, and I'm sure the department can speak better to this than I, but this addresses that issue of the kind of fluctuating estate tax rate based on the amount that's excluded over $1 million and the kind of incremental changes that happen. This would provide just a straightforward two brackets.
And I would hope that Senator Coonan and Senator Gazelka would look at those provisions very carefully, if you would.
Beginning in Section 5, there are some changes to the farm and small business property exclusions that were adopted in 2011. In Section 5, this clarifies that a family member also includes a trust whose beneficiaries are all family members. This also makes some changes to the, or clarifying changes to the definition of qualified small business property. I will note that on page 5, starting on line 8, the small business must not have been a passive activity as defined under federal law in the Internal Revenue Code. The property can't consist of publicly traded assets, and the decedent has to have continuously owned the property for the 3-year period prior to the date of death. It also requires that for the 3 years after the date of death, the trade or business must also not remain a passive activity, or may not turn into a passive activity. Section 7 provides some clarifying language on the farm property exclusion. I'll note here that the property has to be classified as the homestead of the decedent or the decedent's spouse, and be classified as 2A property for purposes of the property tax. Section 8 clarifies some language on the recapture tax. So if the property under the qualified farm or small business exclusions are deemed not to qualify, the recapture tax applies. However, when there's a sole proprietorship, if an heir replaces qualified small business property with similar property, that will be deemed to qualify for the exclusion and will not be subject. That type of transfer would not be subject to the recapture tax.
Any questions on the estate tax article?
Madam Chair, I will take a look at this in detail.
Please do that. Yes, appreciate it. Okay, let's move on then to section or article 7.
Six. Madam Chair and members.
Article 6.
Madam Chair and members, article 6 is city aid. And sections 1 through 9 and 11 is all of the provisions that were in Senator Reinhart's new LGA formula bill. There is one exception, however, the inflation adjustment that was found in section 10 in Senator Reinhart's bill 1491 has been removed. The appropriation amount found in section 9 of article 6 is the $80 million increase, but it is not adjusted for inflation. Section 10 is a new addition, and it requires a property tax savings report. As Ms. Pollack indicated in Article 3, Section 26, there is now a sales tax exemption for cities and counties. And what this section requires is that local governments annually report to the Commission of Revenue on the savings realized to their budgets because of the sales tax exemption, and also the amount of any property tax reduction based on that sales tax exemption. That is a requirement that they report that information to the Commissioner of Revenue. The Commissioner of Revenue is therefore required to compile those reports and report to the chairs of the Senate and House of Representatives committees with jurisdiction over taxes and the majority and minority leaders a calculation of the property tax reduction statewide resulting from the sales tax exemption to these cities and counties, and also a recommendation that if the property taxes are not reduced, at least 75% statewide based on those sales tax exemptions, then commissioner shall recommend that levy limits, which are not currently imposed, shall be imposed if those reductions are not at least 75%.
We characterize this as the prisoner's dilemma. So local governments, pay attention.
And Madam Chair,
any questions on the city aid formula? And once again, as Senator Scoy is pointing out, the county aid increase is to be considered in the omnibus bill. Our intention is to follow the governor's recommendation there. So no surprises about that, and we are doing it at that level currently. It's our intention, as in here, but without inflation.
Chair.
Senator Dietzig.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Okay, so the article is city aid.
Yes.
But Section 10, local governments are doing the report, so does this local governments include counties that?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. And are townships required to do the report, even though that's?
At the beginning of the article, I believe that a local government is defined as all four. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, that is
somewhere.
Correct.
Well, any other questions about City 8 or Article 6? Senator Skoy.
Yes, Madam Chair, and we need to consider to think about that, because being as townships aren't included in the aid component, and they currently are receiving the sales tax relief already, including their levies in here might skew that 75% just a little bit, because there would be no opportunity for them to have reductions.
I think we'll make sure that the language reflecting this concept is not unintentionally going in the wrong direction or affecting. We're looking at what we're doing with this $200 million. We want to see property tax reductions. We regard the exemption for local governments coupled with the city aid and the county aid, all total is $300 million in property tax relief. That's what we're asking for the local governments to consider this exemption to be. Senator Skoy.
And thank you, Madam Chair. And we're, I also did not mention schools, because I think there is expectation that the K-12 committee is doing pretty significant work with the school levy. And mm-hmm. So we would ask them to report the impacts of that.
Same with that. Just a accountability measure here. Any other questions about Article 6? Okay.
Madam
Article
Chair.
7.
Madam Chair and members, Article 7 is aviation taxes. It's taken from Senate File 303 with some minor technical modifications. Section 1 increases the excise tax and on jet and special fuels used as a substitute for aviation taxes. The current rate is 5 cents per gallon, and this is an increase to 15 cents. However, under Section 2, the 5 cent rate is maintained for fuel purchased by airline companies that pay the airline property tax. Section 3 clarifies that a refund is allowed for those jet and special fuel taxes for those companies that pay under Section 2, so the certain airline companies also paying the property tax. Section 3 further clarifies that those purchasers buying the jet fuel at 15 cents rate are not entitled to the refund under the previous section. Section 5 exempts from sales tax the equipment and parts to repair, upgrade, or improve aircraft. This is a general sales tax exemption. Section 6, there's then one sales tax left, and that's on the sale and purchase of aircraft. And this section then requires those revenues to be deposited in the Special Airports Fund. Current law has those revenues deposited in the general fund. This deposit in the airports fund would be a loss to the general fund. Section 7 is a change to the registration tax. This is a tax that goes into the Special Airports Fund, and it's currently set at a rate of 1%. And this is modified and reduced to a rate that is derived on a statutory schedule based on the manufacturer's list price. Subdivision 4 of that same section makes some changes to the how we determine base by price, so it's not based on depreciation but rather on the manufacturer's list price. and the subdivision reflecting depreciation is also repealed on line 4.13 to 4.16.
Madam Chair.
Senator Skoy.
Madam Chair, Ms. McQuaid, could you explain that in English? So that it just, what does the impact of all of those changes in Section 7? We're changing this and changing that. What's the impact of it?
The impact is to reduce the registration tax on aircrafts.
Thank you.
Yeah, the goal is to have more aircraft, general aviation aircraft, registered in Minnesota. Currently, competitively speaking, that doesn't happen because the registration fees are very exorbitant, and this is a way of doing that also lends stability to the state airports fund.
Thank you.
And Madam Chair, members, the state airports fund is comprised of three basic revenues: the sales tax on aircraft, the aviation fuels, and the state, the registration, and then the state airports. Excuse me, the property tax. And so, to decrease the registration tax, and then a corresponding increase in the fuels tax helps maintain that stability. And as Senator Russ mentioned, in the state airports fund.
And I would point out that this is an area that a number of interests have been working on for at least a half a dozen years. And the full bill was heard in the Transportation Finance Division and passed on to Finance, but we're putting it in here instead of waiting for it to actually get here. But it has had a full hearing. And amazingly enough, it is supported by every single special interest that has been involved, including the major airlines and all the associations that have an interest in general aviation and airports throughout Minnesota. So we're hoping that we finally found a solution that is equitable and supporting general aviation and the airports in Minnesota, with the support of, in particular, working with Delta Airlines that support the bill.
Madam Chair and members, Section 8 just updates a cross-reference to reflect current law that the registration tax does go to the State Airports Fund. And then Section 9 requires a report every 4 years, and the report is to include the revenues and expenditures of the State Airports Fund as an attempt to ensure the adequacy of the State Airports Fund.
Okay, any further questions or comments about Article 7? Okay, Article 8, miscellaneous.
Madam Chair and members, Article 8, Section 1 authorizes the Commissioner of Revenue to participate in audits that are performed by the Multi-State Tax Commission. This is necessary because in Section 3, Minnesota's participation in the Multi-State Tax Compact is repealed. Section 2 provides for a sports memorabilia gross receipts tax. This is a tax on the wholesale gross receipts of the items deemed sports memorabilia beginning on line 2.8. These are any items available for public sale sold under a license granted by a professional or collegiate Division I sports team or franchise of a professional sports league or association or affiliate or subsidiary of a league, association, or team. The rate is 13% at the wholesale level. Madam Chair, a similar bill was introduced and a hearing held yesterday in House taxes on this, and I would note that this differs in that the rate is 13%. The rate in the House bill was 10%, and the House bill imposed the tax on box seats and suites, and this provision does not.
Okay, and these
these two provisions are not ones that we have had full hearings on, so I think we will take just a little bit of time to talk about them. Senator Scoy, do you want to mention the sports memorabilia, gross receipts tax? How do you see that fitting into our discussion?
Well, Madam Chair, first let me say that I think the box seat sales tax is included in the general sales tax reforms. So
yes.
That provision
yes.
is in the bill. It's just not in this language. And I am expecting that this area of taxation will be discussed as we go through. I don't have anything specific to say about it other than
okay.
I think it's needed at this point.
Okay. And with the repeal of the participation in multi-state tax compact, there are concerns about as Minnesota moves forward to single sales with regard to the factors in determining corporate income, that we protect that policy, and that could be described as being in jeopardy if we did not do that. So that's why that is coming forward at this time. It's an interest in other states around the country that are similarly moving to single sales. And this is just kind of laying the groundwork to make sure that we protect that policy as we get closer to 100%. So any questions? And that bill has been introduced. Any questions from members about the language and the provisions?
Madam Chair, if I could just make one correction.
Sure.
In Article 1, you asked what the definition of income was for purposes of the clothing
yes,
sales tax
mm-hmm.
credit. And I should correct myself that the definition of income is federal adjusted gross income plus the non-taxable income.
Okay. So it's that we will be measuring against the 200% of federal poverty, but we're
right.
assuming that comes in at around $44,000, $45,000 for a family of four. The credit phases out as the income. It's not a cliff, but it phases out as federal adjusted gross income plus non-taxable income increases. So any questions for our staff? Senator Dietzig.
Madam Chair, so in Article 1, Section 5, Revocation of Credits, this applies to the repayment provisions. I'm reading off the summary. The repayment provisions of Small Business Investment Credit to Greater Minnesota. And I haven't been able to read backwards from that, but why is this just to the Greater Minnesota businesses and not all businesses?
These are some of the anti-gaming provisions.
But again, why would it just...
I know, I'm just...
Thank
announcing
you.
That for the rest.
Okay.
This is part of the anti-gaming provisions. Ms. Pollack, do you want to comment?
Madam Chair and Senator Dietzig, the revocation of credits language pertains under current law to the angel investment or small business investment credit. This section includes the revocation provisions for the qualified greater small Minnesota small businesses. So it just adds the greater Minnesota businesses to the revocation language under current law.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions or clarification? Okay, Ms. McQuay, would you just want to take us through the spreadsheet? And again, if members have questions, please bring them up. And the spreadsheet is organized by article. And then there is a separate sheet that indicates the impact on other funds. And she'll take us through that as well, the legacy funds, the health impact fund, and the state airports fund.
Ms. McQuay.
Madam Chair and members, tax revenues are first. Later on, we'll see the tax aids and credits attributable to this bill. I've included where this bill makes changes, the appropriate corresponding changes that the governor made. So I just want to make the clarification here that this does not include all the governor's provisions.
Correct. And we did, you know, we are responsible for a four-year budget, if you will. So we do include the next biennium, the impact in the next biennium of the changes that we're proposing here. So moving forward.
And, Madam Chair, I'll acquaint the committee with, as we go through this, to column E is the cost or the revenue gain in the first biennium, and those are the numbers that I will speak to, and you can reference the other numbers where appropriate. Beginning on line four is the revenue loss attributable to the income tax credit.
Senator Scoy.
Madam Chair, and just for the members, column E is the column that we're going to be working off for the current biennium. Column H is for the next biennium, so you can compare on that. And then I and J is differences with the governor.
Right.
The Madam Chair, the income tax credit is a revenue loss of $66.95 million in the first biennium, and I would like to note that in the first year of the biennium and the second year, there's a large increase in the second year, and that is just attributable to the fact that the income tax credit is divided in half in the first year to reflect the fact that the sales tax is not going to be imposed until halfway through the calendar year. It's not the fact that more people are coming online in the second year. Madam Chair and members, the short line railroad subtraction, this is Senator Coonan's bill that I have in here incorrectly as Senate Bill 1310, but it's 1301. That is a loss to the income tax total of $120,000 in the first biennium. The increase in the Angel Investment Credit, this was a bill that was brought to the committee by Senators Bonoff, Coonan, Nelson, and Chamberlain. The cost or the increase to that credit was just in a couple of those bills, but the cost that the Reform Division report is reflecting is a $5 million increase for 2 years, and then the credit is also extended for 1 year at a cost of $17 million.
And I point out to members, too, that some of these provisions or the bills that came forward affect both individual income and corporate income, and so they're reflected separately on the spreadsheet, their impacts.
And, Madam Chair and members, the R&D credit is just one situation where that does affect both income and corporate. Because it is allowed for C-Corps as well as S-Corps and individuals. The Senate Bill 10, Senator Rest Provision, and Senator Ortman also had a modification to the R&D credit. The cost reflected here is just increasing the second tier from 2.5% to 4.5% at a cost of $1.4 million in the first biennium.
And I would also point out there, I did try to work in the approach that Senator Ortman had, but it became very problematical, and so we stayed with the Senate File 10 with regard to increasing the R&D credit. But we did try and work with her formula, just could not make it work in a way that made sense.
Madam Chair and members, the last line under income tax is the interaction for the increase in the LGA aid appropriation. The income tax interaction would be at a revenue gain of $1.45 million, and that is reflective of the increase in aid that the cities will be getting.
And how does that work?
Madam Chair, I had it in my head this morning, and I will have to defer to the department or come back to that on that.
Okay. I think it probably looks very curious to people, so I do think we need at least some explanation of why that from their estimators. He's right here, so why don't we get that cleared up right away? Just bring up another chair. So if you'd identify yourself, please, and explain that interaction and why it shows up as a revenue gain.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Eric Ouellette with the Department of Revenue.
Mr. Ouellette.
Anytime there's a change to a property tax law that reduces property taxes, we estimate how that will flow through as a reduction in deductions on personal and corporate income taxes. So because you're increasing local government aid by $80 million, we project that that will push down local levies, which will flow through as a savings to the state because income tax receipts will be higher because the deductions are smaller for property taxes. There's a similar interaction with our property tax refund program. With homestead property taxes going down because of the LGA increase, the state's cost in property tax refunds also goes down, and that's also reflected on the spreadsheet.
Why would that, Mr. Ouellette, why would not a similar interaction occur with the exemption for sales taxes for local governments?
Madam Chair and members of the committee, it could very well. Historically, the department hasn't had adequate information on impact between cost drivers for local government and levies. So we generally have only applied interactions when there's been a revenue side impact to local governments.
Where there's actually an appropriation for that specific purpose.
That's correct.
Senator Skoy.
The other thing, I think the some of the sales tax impacts will be on fees that the city imposes and not necessarily all property tax.
It's true. Okay. Okay, Ms. McQuay.
Madam Chair and members, then the subtotal for the individual income tax is a revenue loss of $77.02 million in the first biennium and $106.59 million in the second biennium. Moving on to the corporate income tax, the report includes several provisions for the foreign source royalty repeal as well as the FOC repeal. The foreign source royalty repeal is $189.2 million in the first biennium. The FOC repeal is $44 million in the first biennium. The interaction of those two repealers is an additional $4 million. In addition, the governor also proposed a change to the measurement of Minnesota sales, and this is a revenue gain of $46 million in the first biennium. Additionally, there is a change to the foreign partnerships resulting in a revenue gain of $12 million in the first biennium. The committee, the division report does not include the economic substance doctrine that the governor included in his proposal. There's also a proposal to expand the corporate income tax to include REIT dividends, and this would be a $2 million expansion of the corporate income tax. Then on line 19 from Senator Russ's bill, Senate File 1010 is the NOL, allowing an NOL transfer at a cost of $30 million in the first biennium. This is a capped amount at $15 million each year. The governor also proposed indexing the minimum fee, and that is contained in the division report, and that is revenue gain of $18.7 million in the first biennium. In addition, the Short Line Railroad subtraction also has a corporate income tax cost in the first biennium of $80 million. And as Ms. Pollack mentioned, that this is a federal credit that was extended only for fiscal year or calendar year 13, which is reflected only in fiscal year 14. Line 22 is the modification to the R&D credit, the portion attributable to the corporate franchise tax, and that's at $64.1 million each in the first biennium. Then imposed on all those provisions and the existing, or imposed on the existing provisions, a rate reduction to 9% for a cost of $161 million in the first biennium, and then a rate reduction on the expanded provisions, as listed above, of an additional $18.1 million. And then the levy change interactions as a result of reductions and deductions of the property tax is a gain to the corporate franchise income tax of $400,000 in the first biennium. The subtotal for the corporate franchise tax is $43.02 million revenue gain in the first biennium and a $29.1 million gain in the second biennium. Then moving on to sales tax, and I will just note here that the rate was reduced first, and then every provision that we've listed here is broadened at the rate of 5.677%. So we don't take a increase it, bring it in on the increase, and then decrease it. It's shown exactly the opposite as it is in the corporate. So first
thing is reduce the rate and then broaden the base.
Correct. So, Madam Chair, beginning on line 30, the rate reduction on the items currently taxed to 5.677%, and that's just the general fund rate. And that in the first biennium is a loss of $1.12 billion. And then the first provision is the affiliate nexus. And, Madam Chair, is it your pleasure that I walk through each of these individually? Or
why don't we just ask members to look over them and for just a few seconds here, and if there's one that they particularly question how we got there.
And, Madam Chair and members, the
If there are ones that you think need further explanation or that you want to draw our attention to, if there's any difficulty in the sourcing or something like that, or if it presented particular dilemmas in trying to figure out the estimate. For example, I don't think you need to go into clothing, but some of the others might need a little bit more explanation, but I'll let you choose at this point, unless someone has a particular question.
Okay, Madam Chair, beginning on line 31, I'll just note that the affiliate nexus provision is the same in the governor's as in the Senate. However, the governor's looks larger because it's brought in at 6.5%, where the Senate is bringing broadening that base provision to 5.677%. So there's no change. It just simply reflects the different rate. Madam Chair and members, on line 36, the admission to stadium box seats is for pro sports only.
And that's a provision that Senator Skoy mentioned earlier.
Madam Chair and members, the as you had mentioned, line 41, the over-the-counter drugs does take into account that anything prescribed by a doctor is it remains exempt. Then moving on to line 51, auto repair services, and this would be the same policy for all the above provisions and below, that if the tax is on the service, irregardless of who pays it. Then on line 53, Madam Chair, I would just like to note that that also includes farm machinery repair. Then, Madam Chair, members, on line 77, publications is a relatively small number because of the exclusion of newspapers that remain exempt. Then moving on to the specific bills, Madam Chair, on line 78, Senate File 326 was your bill that was discussed when we walked through the language. This was reflective of a revenue loss that's specific to this exemption for motor vehicle paint purchased by an auto repair shop. However, the increase is absorbed in the auto repair service, as you had mentioned. Madam Chair, members, the sales tax on upfront capital equipment exemption phase-in is phased in beginning in fiscal year 16, so the first biennium is an increase or a revenue loss of $25.6 million, and $121.2 million in the next biennium. Madam Chair, members, on line 80, Senate File 1492, Senator Russ, was your bill. The nursing home exemption is a negligible cost. Senate File 1433 was allowing multiple points of use, and that is a revenue loss of $1.2 million in the first biennium. In addition, the religious affiliation sales tax exemption is a cost to the general fund of $125,000 in the first biennium. That does also note that this effective date is the only difference for the rest of the article. This is a retroactive to June 30th, 2012. Then on line 83, Madam Chair, is the sales and use tax exemption for cities and counties, and that is a cost of $202.4 million in the first biennium. The subtotal for the sales tax changes is a revenue increase of $145 million in the first biennium and $126.8 million in the second biennium. Madam Chair and members, moving on to the other excise taxes, the general fund portion of the aviation fuels is reflected here. This is reflective of two pieces: the sales tax exemption of the parts and equipment, and then the transfer of the registration tax into the state from the of the sales tax on aircraft from the general fund into the state airports fund, and that is a cost of $12.8 million in the first biennium. The sports memorabilia tax has an asterisk here. We did not have a revenue estimate for that provision. That will be coming to the committee shortly. The estate tax provisions, as Ms. Pollack mentioned, include Senator Coonan's bill, Senate File 900, that modify qualified farm and small business provisions. There's a revenue gain for these provisions of $23.8 million in the first biennium. Decoupling from the federal estate tax at two rates of 9% and 17% is a revenue loss of $20.9 million in the first biennium. The subtotal for the estate tax is $2.9 million in the first biennium and $10.8 million in the second biennium. Moving on to the tobacco provisions, the cigarette excise tax includes an increase of 94 cents per pack, as well as an increase of 75 cents per pack reflected on this line. We're higher than the governor on this because of the roll-in of the 75 cents from the HIF. And that is a revenue gain of $598.9 million in the first biennium. In addition, there's a flow-through onto the sales tax of cigarettes, an increase of $1.9 million in the first biennium. There's a one-time floor stocks tax on cigarettes only for a revenue gain of $17.9 million in the first biennium. The non-settlement fee is also increased. This was in Senator Dibble's bill, and that's at a revenue gain of $1.2 million in the first biennium. The tobacco excise tax is also increased 20% effectively. However, the increase is 55% in the statute because of the roll-in of the HIF. And this provision also includes the minimum tax on the moist snuff, and that is $97.5 million. And then the flow through to the sales tax on cigarettes is $2.3 million in the first biennium. Little cigars are taxed within other tobacco products, but at the cigarette excise tax equivalent, and that is at $21 million. And then there's a corresponding loss to the other tobacco products excise tax because it's not taxed there, and that's at a loss of $4 million. The flow-through to the sales tax then on is $600,000. In addition, there's a maximum tax for the premium cigars of 50 cents, and that is at a revenue loss of $1.2 million. And then as people are paying more taxes, there's a corresponding increase to the refunds paid out. There's no change to the refunds. It's just as a result of the changes in the bill, and that's at a loss of $400,000. In addition, there's an appropriation to the Commissioner of Revenue for a study in the first year only, and that's a loss of $100,000. The subtotal then for the sale, the tobacco tax is 735.6 in the first biennium and 780.6 in the second biennium. Again, that reflects the increase of the HIF, the roll-in of the HIF.
Madam Chair.
Senator Skoy.
Could Ms. McClay give us the number without the roll-in of the HIF?
Mr. Chair and members, I don't have that exactly, although the largest impact would just be in column I, so the reform division minus the governor, because we are imposing the same increase as the governor. I can get that number for the committee, add it all up, but.
Yeah, in time.
Okay.
Thank you.
Then, Madam Chair and members, the total tax revenue changes on the top of page 3, line 110, is $836.835 million in the first biennium and $826.779 million in the second biennium. Then, Madam Chair and members, moving on to tax aids and credits, the two changes within that provision or within that title are the LGA increases and the corresponding PTR and their actions. The LGA increases at $80 million in the first biennium, and that is a revenue loss. The as a result of property taxes going down, there'll be less property tax refunds, so a revenue gain of $1.86 million in the first biennium. The subtotal then for tax aids and credits is a loss of 78.14 in the first biennium and 156.28 in the second biennium. Then, Madam Chair and members, the transfer of the HIF. So when we repeal the HIF, there will no longer be a transfer of the HIF to the general fund because there will not be any revenues going into the HIF. And so the HIF transfer then is a loss to the general fund of $376.4 million in the first biennium and $391.1 million in the second biennium. There's some leftover collections in the next fiscal year of the HIF, and that is picked up on line 121 of $16.37 million that will be then deposited in the general fund purse, some session law language that Ms. Pollack mentioned. Then, Madam Chair and members, the on line 125, the total, including the cost of the tax aids and credits as well as the transfers, is $398.665 million in the first biennium and $279.399 in the second biennium.
So that total number is the total impact of the of all eight articles. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, that's netted out. Correct.
Okay.
And Madam Chair.
Senator Skoy.
Madam Chair, I know we don't have the number now, but could we speculate that the majority of that is coming from the cigarette tax?
Madam Chair,
McQuay,
Senator
did you hear
Skoy,
his speculation?
The total of the cigarette tax is, yes, we can.
Well, when you subtract, Madam Chair.
And yes, why don't you go ahead and make the point
why
it's like that.
Madam Chair, when you subtract the HIF out of the tobacco article, it will be very comparable to the bottom line number. Not going to be exactly because we did the best we could. We tried to keep the rest of the stuff pretty revenue neutral.
Right. Within the within an article or a couple of articles to reduce rates, broaden base, give credits, so that the in the individual, in particular individual and sales tax, that we were striving for reform rather than seeing that as the place where revenue would be raised to deal with the deficit and our investments in education. Any other questions from members? It's not our intention to take testimony today, but if, as members of the public have looked at the articles, I think, you know, we have a little bit of time. If you have any particular questions or things that you don't understand, I certainly would welcome you coming to the witness table to give us those questions and so that we can have our staff look at them. Anybody have a question? Okay. Some things that the division is very interested in and partial to are not in this in the division report. Senator Scoy and I have talked, and we're unlikely to amend them into the division report, even though we like them, we're interested in them, and some of it is due to we need more information on some of the proposals that have come forward, and I'll just indicate them to you that those even members that have amendments dealing with these issues, we would just request that you hold them off until the full committee meets. We've heard, and I'm going to tell you what those subject matters are. We've heard concerns about giving additional support in the military pay and veterans pay issue. We are looking at that and a way of doing that, but we're going to hold off until the full committee to do that. I've talked with, in terms of the nexus provisions, the Retail Association dealing with drop shipping. We're going to hold off on language there to cover that until the full committee. We've heard Senator Eaton's bill on medical devices, cleaning up some language there. It's pretty straightforward, but we're still going to hold off and put that in the consideration of that in the full division of the full committee bill. Same thing with all the issues that are concerning data centers. We're interested in that, but there have been problems with that all along. We're going to try and resolve them, but we're not going to resolve them by Tuesday. And then I think of a particular interest to all of us were the proposals that came forward from Senator Ingebrigtsen and Senator Stumpf dealing with the critical care access to dentistry, and we're going to hold off on that. We do not have provisions in this bill for all the bills that have come forward dealing with local option sales taxes or with tax increment financing. The public finance bill, the so-called public finance bill, has been introduced. That will not come into the division report. We'll take that up and deal with that later, either inside or outside of the full tax committee. So I would encourage members, if and of course, we, as I mentioned at the beginning, we do not have anything in here that deals with where the appropriate income tax rate should be set. So I would encourage members to look over these articles, and to the extent that there are provisions in these articles that themselves that need modification or clarification, that you get your amendments drawn to those rather than adding additional subject matter, if that's agreeable. That's what our goal is, so that we now can really after Tuesday and adopting this with whatever action takes place there, that we can move on to really putting together in the context of tax reform, but also obviously a lot of property tax issues are very important to us, and to particularly Senator Scoy, we started dealing with them, and that will become probably a major focus in the omnibus bill going forward. Is that correct characterization, Senator Scoy?
Yes, Madam Chair, and I thank you for your work. It's just tremendous effort you did here.
Okay. Anything further, Ms. McQuaid?
Madam Chair, to answer Senator Scoy's question about the tobacco tax increase reflective of the roll-in of the HIF amount, the total increase is decreased from $735.6 million to $360.03 million, if you just reflect the change, the increase aside from the roll-in.
Okay. And also, if anyone has a desire for clarification that wants to talk to any of us about these provisions, we have, you know, through Tuesday, and we are meeting tomorrow in the full committee. Please come and see us. We're happy to talk to you about the provisions and make sure that we get the language right, even as we're promoting the policy. There being no further business before the committee, we stand adjourned. You're not drafting on that.